Good morning and happy Thursday, everybody. One day closer to Friday. Okay, members, we have a very, very tight schedule. And even though you may have been told 5 minutes, we're going to push that down to like 3 to 4 minutes. Okay, so members, I know you love to hear yourself talk, but we're going to ask that you just keep your members very short in the beginning. Oh, I'm not talking about our committee members, because you guys are also very quiet and nobody likes to talk here. So if you're presenting a bill, please keep your intro short and your closing comments short and just allow your testifiers to shine, okay? And so welcome to the committee. Today is March 20th. Vice Chair Fogelman, will you approve the minutes from the 18th?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I move the minutes for the 18th.
Fantastic. Members, do we have any questions, comments, concerns? Okay, seeing none, minutes from the 18th are approved. Way to go, Chair Lee, on those amazing minutes. Okay, first up, we are going to have Representative O'Driscoll. So if you'll make your way to the testifying table with your testifiers, followed up, then we're going to go Representative Burkle. So if you'll take your testifiers behind, and then we are going to have Representative Gilman after that. So Representative Gilman, if you will make your way behind as well, just so we can have a nice, steady, even flow of people here. All right. And then we might bump somebody if Representative Scott pops in. So just please go with the flow today, okay, folks? Representative O'Driscoll.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. We are here today to talk about how PFAS is not only affecting the metro area, that it is affecting the greater Minnesota area as well. And I have Ross Olson, the city administrator from the city of Sauk Rapids, to explain to you how the city of Sauk Rapids is being affected by PFAS. Madam Chair.
Please state your name for the record. You may proceed.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, my name is Ross Olson. I'm the city administrator with the city of Sauk Rapids. This September, I will have completed my 25th year with the city, 24 of them as the city administrator. 2021, I had an email from our utilities director. It was a letter from the Department of Health indicating that the test results for wells 2 and 3 exceeded their recommendations for PFAS levels. Those are now past what the EPA has as far as appropriate levels for PFAS. Sauk Rapids is quite unique in that we are a Mississippi River community with significant elevations. Due to those elevations, historically, we've had to have more than one water system. We have a high-pressure system and a low-pressure system. These two wells are within our low-pressure system, and they're the only two that are within our low-pressure system. The city is very proactive. We have a significant capital improvement plan. We did not anticipate losing 2 of our 5 wells, which is exactly what happened. We expedited a well 7. We are far below now capacity that we've shut down wells 2 and 3 for the safety of the community. And it is that connection of our high-pressure system and our low-pressure system that is what's driving these costs. And 1, 2, that's the first driver. Number 2 is the additional wells just to get us back to the capacity that we were at prior to PFAS contamination. So I'm here to request $3.6 million. That is half of the drilling of a new well. It takes 2 additional wells. It'll take the additional capacity needed to get to our water treatment plant and all the engineering that goes along with providing that safe water to the whole community.
Thank you. Members, do we have questions for Mr. Olson here? Congratulations on 25 years. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe it's a question for you on have we had any more success in getting scheduled information from the Attorney General about the PFAS settlements? And because I'm sure probably every day we're going to be hearing more bills on PFAS. So just checking in if you've heard anything.
We have not heard anything, but perhaps we would have better luck if Chair Lee would reach out to the office there, and maybe we can get that done, because I think we have bipartisan support on a lovely meeting with the Attorney General. All right, thank you for that. All right, Representative O'Driscoll, closing comments.
Representative and Chair Franson, Representative and Chair Lee, thank you for the opportunity to be here, and we would certainly appreciate your looking kindly upon the request for the City of Sauk Rapids. Thank you, members.
Thank you, and thank you for making your way down and advocating for your city. Appreciate that. Okay, next up, Representative Burkle, please make your way to the testifying table. You have House File 603 for the City of Kennedy. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative John Burkle, District 1A, thank you for hearing House File 603, a bill that would appropriate $734 million for underground water tanks in the City of Kennedy. City of Kennedy had a water tower freeze. We heard this bill last year, actually, making it non-functional and unrepairable. Just to keep things moving, I'm going to just turn it over to my testifier right away.
Great, thank you. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Hi. My name is Melissa Wonarovich, and I serve as the city clerk for the City of Kennedy. Chair Franzen and members of the Capital Investment Committee, I'd like to thank Representative Burkle for once again introducing this bill, and I want to express my gratitude to this committee for taking the time to hear about this urgent issue facing our community. Kennedy is a rural town in the far northwest corner of Minnesota. In January 2017, our water tower froze, leaving it non-functional and beyond repair. To maintain water service to the city, we bypassed the tower and implemented a temporary direct feed system. This temporary solution has now been in place for 8 years. Due to the excessive cost of replacing the water tower, we have developed an alternative plan of installing a booster station and repairing our underground storage tanks, which will serve as our water reserve. The total estimated cost is $2,696,000. While we have secured grant funding, it is not enough, and we still need additional support. Kennedy is home to just 103 households. The residents are known for being hardworking and dedicated to their family and community. The median household income is $60,000, and many of our residents are retired and on a fixed income. In addition to our water infrastructure challenges, we anticipate major sewer repairs in the near future. Our city operates on a very limited budget, and we fear that an increased tax levy would place an overwhelming burden on our residents. Further complicating our situation, the 18-mile water line that supplies Kennedy is another point of vulnerability. A break anywhere along that line would leave the city without water until repairs could be completed, which could take days. Access to safe, affordable, and reliable water is not a luxury. It is a basic human right, and it is also very critical for fire protection. Currently, our fire hydrants are unusable. Drawing water from them risks collapsing the water line, cutting off Kennedy's water supply entirely. Without functioning hydrants, our fire department is limited to 5,000 gallons of water that we have stored in our trucks and water brought by mutual aid. The water on hand provides only 6 to 10 minutes of fire suppression, and the nearest mutual aid takes approximately 20 minutes to arrive. In a fire, our firefighters' first priority is rescue. They will use the little water they have to suppress the flames just enough to enter the structure and begin search and rescue. By the time additional water arrives from mutual aid, the structure and potentially lives may already be lost. Now I'd like to paint a picture for you. A home catches fire and 911 is called. Our volunteer firefighters arrive on scene and immediately begin using their limited water supply to suppress the flames so they can attempt a rescue. The best case scenario is they make entry, rescue the family inside, and continue firefighting with whatever water remains. The worst case scenarios are they don't have enough water to suppress the flames to even begin a rescue, and they must make the difficult decision to protect surrounding homes instead. Or they enter only to run out of water before everyone, including themselves, can safely exit. The need for water reserves in Kennedy is not just about daily convenience, it's a public safety issue. I sincerely thank you for your time and consideration. Your leadership in addressing critical infrastructure challenges across Minnesota is deeply appreciated. And thank you again to Representative Burkle for your continued efforts bringing attention to this. Thank you.
Thank you so much for testifying. Members, do we have any questions? No? Okay. Representative Burkle, closing thoughts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you've heard from Melissa, this water project is extremely important to this small community up in northwest Minnesota. And I appreciate you hearing the bill today. And thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you for advocating for your city, Kennedy. And just so you know, Representative Burkle has been bugging my ear on this project. So he's doing his job. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to skip Representative Gilman for a hot second. We're going to go to Representative Scott. You'll make your way to the table with your testifiers. You'll be next, Representative Gilman. You'll state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Peggy Scott, and members. And it looks like we have a junior member with Chair Lee there has a junior member at the table today. Thank you for hearing this bill. There's a neighborhood in Andover. The subdivision is called Red Oaks. And a few years ago, we got funding. The wells, most of the people there live, they have wells that supply their drinking water. And it was found out a few years ago that there's PFAS and some other really harmful things in that water. And so this is phase two of allowing or putting in city sewer or city water hookups for those residents whose drinking water is posing a public health risk. So I have both our mayor and our city administrator here this morning, and I'll let them do the rest.
Fantastic. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Yeah, my name is Jamie Barthel. Good morning to the chair and committee members. Thank you for having us. As I said, my name is Jamie Barthel, and I'm the mayor of the great city of Andover, Minnesota. I'm here today to strongly advocate for House File 2080, which seeks critical funding for the Red Oaks neighborhood in Andover. Specifically, I'm here to request the committee's support of the $8 million appropriation from the state bond proceeds to fund the Pollution Control Agency as outlined in the House file. This funding is essential to provide a grant to the city of Andover for addressing the ongoing groundwater contamination impacting private wells in the western portion of our Red Oaks neighborhood, known in our community as Red Oaks Phase 2. As you know, the Red Oaks neighborhood has been grappling with the serious issue of private well contamination from an unidentified source. Thanks to previously secured bond funding, the Red Oaks Phase 1 project, or what we call the mitigation area, was successfully connected to municipal water supply in 2024, providing a safe and reliable source of drinking water for those residents. I want to give a huge thank you to this group and to all representatives for the grateful for your past support, which has been a significant impact on our community. House File 2080 directly addresses the remaining needs of the western portion of our neighborhood, where testing has unfortunately revealed PFAS contamination in private drinking wells above the Minnesota Department of Health guidance. The proposed solution for the Red Oaks Phase 2 monitoring area is to design and construct new municipal water mains on all streets where households have tested positive for PFAS contamination above the guidelines. This will allow homeowners with contaminated wells in all 96 properties in the monitoring area to connect to a safe and reliable municipal water supply. The proactive approach will prevent future exposure and the need for ongoing cost with temporary solutions. On behalf of the residents of Andover, the residents of the Red Oaks neighborhood, I urge the members of the House Capital Investment Committee to support House File 2080 and to approve the $8 million in funding to facilitate the installation of municipal water in this impacted neighborhood. This bill represents a crucial step toward providing clean drinking water to the residents of the Red Oaks neighborhood and protecting our environment. Thank you all for your time, and I'm willing to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Cotton, did you want to add anything?
I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When the PCA was here and testified, they mentioned that the appropriation needed to be $2 million in cash. There was that some of it was not bondable. Do you have any information on that, or is that your understanding that $2 million had to be done with cash for some reason?
Ms. Cotton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
If you want to just speak right into the mic a little bit more, thank you.
Yes, Sarah Cotton, I'm the city administrator for the city of Andover. So we do understand the constraints on the general obligation bonds, and the $8 million request is aligned with those limitations. So really what we're looking for is $6 million for the design and construction of the new water mains that would be in the public right-of-way, and that would be eligible for bond funding. The remaining $2 million is a non-bondable cost, and that would cover the individual service connections, the well sealing, and then that would need to be require support from the general fund.
And Ms. Cotton, is any of that for the planning money, can that be phased? Does it have to all be $6 million up front, or can that be phased?
So we're looking for that up front. We've done survey work and the feasibility, so now we're looking to do the design and the construction over the next couple of years.
Okay. Members? All right, seeing none. Representative Scott? Final words?
Would really appreciate your support. Some of these folks are living off of bottled water, and so it's kind of a predicament. So really need to have phase two taken care of. So
okay.
Thank you, members.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying today and being at the Capitol. Appreciate
that.
Thank you. Representative Gilman, please make your way up. You have two bills up. We're going to start with House File 1968 for the city of you know the city.
I know the city.
Yeah.
Okato.
Dassel. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay. Please state your name for the record. You may proceed, Representative Gilman.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chair.
And into this
Representative Don Gilman. And here, I'm going to just turn my time over right away to my testifier so we can utilize the time wisely.
Good morning. Kevin Wilson, City of Cokato, City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today before the committee. Cokato is a sponsor of this bill. 50 years ago, when Dassel and Cokato school districts merged, they built a school right between the two cities. And at that time, it made sense to tie into a well for drinking water. Since then, the district has added a middle school, performing arts center, as well as a recreation center. The demand for palatable drinking water, as well as fire suppression, has increased substantially. And in addition, the standards for those have as well increased, which has really made it so the school doesn't need to be in the water treatment business. The city of Cokato has the expertise and the staff to handle it. From the city's perspective, the communities of Dassel and Cokato, beyond just the school, but the cities are very intertwined and they're very complementary of each other. There is a natural tendency for the commercial and residential development to go towards each other, between Dassel and Cokato. This project would provide the capability to facilitate that development, something that the city can't do without the partnership with the school. One of the questions you probably are going to ask is going to be about the federal funding we've applied for. We're working with our congressman, and we're competing this year, and we've also resubmitted for next year under the federal budget as well for funding. In addition, as we look, we're also looking for other funding sources as well. I would leave you with this. We're asking for $419,000, a small portion of the entire project. However, at the local level, the municipal level, as well as the federal level, that commitment from the state goes a long ways. And so we really appreciate the opportunity to work with the state and this committee. Thank you.
Please state your name for the record. You may proceed.
Superintendent Mark Raymond. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and testify in front of you as committee members today. I'm here really just to provide just a small amount of background. In 1970, the two cities of Dassel and Cokato got together. They put together one of the very first cooperative educational centers. At that time, it was the right decision to install wells. We were that far away from the two cities that it was cost prohibitive at that time to do it. The changes in guidance and water quality in the last 50 years have moved us to a position where, unfortunately, myself and my staff are operating in an area outside of our core competency. We're really excited and happy to partner with the City of Cokato in order to move in a direction that's actually much better for my students, my staff. I'd love to be able to focus on the idea of education rather than on the idea of water treatment. The idea of making sure that the people that are really good in their core competencies are taking care of that is really fundamental from our end. So I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any questions? All right, Representative Gilman, closing thoughts on House File 1968.
Thank you for your consideration.
All right. Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol and advocating for your city. Next up, Representative Gilman, House File 228 for the city of Biscay.
Biscay.
One day I'll get it.
All right.
All right.
So thank you so much again for hearing this bill. And I love that you called it Biscay because our friend Eric also calls it Biscay.
Sometimes I feel a little French. You know what I'm saying?
This is a vital bill, and it's an important thing that we're bringing forward today. So I am going to just right away turn it over to my testifiers.
Please state your name for the record. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Gary Cook. I am the mayor of Biscay. Our project is for the human health and well-being of our community and its 103 residents and 48 homes. Our project includes replacing our entire water system, including the water main, adding a water tower, and improving our water treatment. Here are some reasons and facts about the need for our project. Town has water infrastructure that is over 80 years old and has had multiple leaks in the past years that have cost the city large amounts to repair an old system. One constituent is complaining that her $60 water filter plugs in 2 hours. The water in our town looks like orange juice after about 3 minutes. Water pressure in the homes across the street from the treatment facility cannot maintain the pressure needed to power a water sprinkler. Over half of the population is on a fixed income or nearing Social Security age. Many houses are mobile or manufactured homes. Town cannot afford a cost increase of this magnitude with a current negative balance in the water account. This project is critical to make sure our town is able to sustain a potable water treatment plan for our constituents. The cost per household of this project is approximately $70,000, which is more than the cost of most homes. This equates to roughly $700 per month per home. Additional facts, the total tax base for the city for the entire year is $25,000. Median household income is under $50,000. Many home values are also under $70,000. I am one of the people that lives in the city that is under the age of 50, and that consists of 19 people of our 103 people. Most, about 70% of our population is over the age of 65. Mm. Thank you for your consideration at this time for this life-sustaining project, and I will turn it over to my city engineer.
All right. Please state your name for the record. You may proceed.
Yeah. Tim Corby, city engineer, but also the past president for the state's engineering society, ACEC. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for hearing us today. I did want to note that that $70,000 number, that's the cost of the project per home. So it's $70,000 per homeowner, which I believe is probably one of the most expensive projects in the state of Minnesota. I've been doing this for 40 years as city engineer, and personally, again, as the state's past president for engineers and doing city engineering, I've never seen a more dire need for a community than Biscay for a project that needs some financial assistance. Keep in mind, this is why we're all here today, listening to a lot of sewer and water projects, whereas Biscay paid, 80 years ago, they paid 100% of their project. Most of the other cities in Minnesota received 95% grants, so pretty much free water and sewer systems. They're all coming due right now. They're all 50 to 80 years old. That's why you're hearing a lot of sewer and water bills. Again, repeating, they paid 100% of their systems, while most of the other cities in Minnesota got 95 to 100% grants from the federal government. So thank you again to Representative Gilman. Thank you again to your committee for your consideration, again, of this life-sustaining project. Thank you.
Thank you. And, yes, our body is well aware of the pressures facing Minnesota with the wastewater treatment issues going on. Yes, they're all coming due, aren't they?
All coming due.
Representative Scraba, please enlighten us.
Thank you, Chair. You'd think it's a conspiracy. Do you have a PFA number?
We are applying for the PFA right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have one by June 1st.
What's your average bill cost for your home?
For water currently?
Yeah, water, sewer.
Currently,
our bill cost is about $57 for a two-person household.
Okay.
So it's anywhere.
Does that include water and sewer or just?
That's just water. Our sewer is about $140 for a two-person household.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Representative Sexton?
I'm sorry. I have not been to Biscay or Biscay yet, but I see Hutchinson is not very far away. Is there a comparison on prices to pipe water in from Hutchinson to lower your overall costs? Because your operating costs would be fairly high if you redo this.
Mr. Corby?
Madam Chair, committee, we have looked at that. That would be more than the $3.5 million to connect to the pipe. Plus, there'd be the monthly charge from Hutchinson.
Okay. At first, I thought I was going to have Guy Fieri in our committee here.
He does look like a doesn't
And
he?
I'm sure you've never heard that before, but I was really excited.
only about once every hour.
See? All right. Closing thoughts, Representative Gilman.
Again, thank you, committee. Thank you, Chair, for hearing my two bills that are so vital to my community.
All right. Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today, and thanks for allowing us to have a little chuckle there. Doesn't get very exciting here sometimes in capital investments. So thank you for presenting. Representative Zalesnikar, you are up next with House File 569 for the city of Two Harbors, one of my old stomping grounds as well. And then you may state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Franson. I am Representative Natalie Zalesnikar. I represent 3B, and I have the mayor of Two Harbors here today. This bill is a very simple bill. It is a bill for Highway 61, which I would be shocked if you haven't traveled on Highway 61 through the great city of Two Harbors and to stop there or to travel up the North Shore. And to honor time, I'm going to defer my time to the mayor of Two Harbors to explain why this is so important for our state.
Mayor Connor, you may state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Co-Chair Franson and Co-Chair Lee and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Lou Connor, and I am the mayor of Two Harbors. I'm here to express my strong support for House File 569, which would provide $6 million in public infrastructure funding to help our city complete the Highway 61 reconstruction project in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And in particular, thank you, Representative Zalesnikar, for introducing the bill and for your tremendous support of the North Shore. Highway 61 is a lifeline of our community, and it's the main corridor through Two Harbors, connecting residents, businesses, and visitors to essential services, Lake Superior, and the broader North Shore region. MnDOT's reconstruction of this vital highway is a once-in-a-generation opportunity for our city to upgrade and modernize critical public infrastructure that serves not just Two Harbors, but the tens of thousands of travelers who visit the North Shore each year. However, like many greater Minnesota communities, Two Harbors does not have the financial resources to fully fund its local share of these infrastructure improvements. The $6 million in bonding support provided by this bill will ensure that our city can design, construct, and replace essential services and infrastructure, including sanitary and storm systems, reconstruction of sidewalks and trail crossings, wastewater and stormwater management systems, and adding ADA-compliant pedestrian ramps, curbs, gutters, and street lighting. Without this funding, Two Harbors would face significant financial strain, delaying or scaling back necessary infrastructure work and placing an undue burden on the residents. This investment will not only improve the safety, accessibility, and functionality of Highway 61, but also support economic growth, tourism, and quality of life for everyone who lives, works, and visits our community. I urge you to support HF 569 and help us complete this critical infrastructure. And thank you for your time and consideration. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor Connor. Members, do we have questions? Yes, Representative Zhang.
Madam Chair, if I could request that when we do our tours, we stop by Two Harbors and then Representative Zalesnikar get us some pies, some Betty's pies.
Fantastic. I'm game. So thank
you. We would love to have you.
Representative Perez Vega.
I concur with Representative Jaejeong.
And I'm the same, so I think we have a quorum, members. I think we've moved that. All right. Two Harbors it is. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. I keep pronouncing your last name wrong. Sorry. Would you like final thoughts?
Thank you, chairs of this committee, and thank you for the time to present. And I would be thrilled to get pies and encourage you all to come up the North Shore. This is a huge, vital, connecting pathway to explore all of the North Shore of Lake Superior, Grand Marais, Two Harbors, Silver Bay, and just get up there. So this is a really crucial thing, and I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you for presenting. Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol, Mayor. Appreciate that. Okay. Next up, we have Representative Burkle for House File 692. House File 692 for the Red River Basin. We are moving to flood hazard mitigation now, folks. Very exciting stuff. Well, not really if you're in a flood zone.
Extremely exciting stuff where I'm at.
All right. You may state your name for the record, Representative Burkle, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 692, a bill that proposes $48.6 million for six projects in the Red River Basin through the DNR's Flood Hazard Mitigation Program. The DNR Flood Hazard Mitigation Program is a statewide program that provides grants to communities to build and upgrade critical infrastructure for preventing floods and storing water on land. I'll turn things over to my testifiers to keep things moving along, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
All right. Please state your name for the record. You may proceed.
Yes, my name is Robert Sipp. I'm the Executive Director of the Red River Watershed Management Board, and I want to thank the chair, both chairs, and the committee for allowing us to testify. So just some brief background on the Red River Watershed Management Board. We were created in 1976 by the Minnesota Legislature. We're a joint powers board of seven watershed districts in northwest Minnesota. We also have 21 counties within our jurisdictional boundary and quite a few cities. So we do a lot of partnering with other local units of government. So regarding our flood infrastructure in northwest Minnesota, just to give you a little bit more perspective on the types of projects we do, the Red Board has helped fund over 60 large-scale flood impoundments and water storage projects. We also have over 650 farmstead ring dikes. We've also helped assist many cities with city flood protection, including flood walls and flood levees. We also have some technical guidance for culvert sizing and two-stage ditches. And then also there's quite a few federal activity that's been done in the Red River Basin. There are a couple federal dams as well. Down in the southern end of the Red River Basin. Regarding our request on behalf of the Red River Watershed Management Board managers, we request $48 million for seven projects, one of them being a city project and six of them being larger water storage flood impoundments. So if we could get these projects done and fully functional, that would equate to 100,000 acre feet of new water storage on the landscape, and that's a significant amount of new water storage on the landscape. Our projects are also multi-purpose and will include water quality enhancements. And for example, the projects collectively would result in just over 17,000 tons of sediment reductions per year. Regarding phosphorus reductions, that would be 16,000 pounds per year of phosphorus reductions. And then regarding nitrogen, that would be 117,000 pounds per year of nitrogen reductions. The projects will also result in almost 15,000 acres of restored, created, or enhanced wetlands and grassland areas, and then about 75 acres of new stream habitat or enhanced and restored. These projects will also control just over 1 million acres of upstream areas. So just a little bit on the financial part looking at this year. So going into the session, the governor did request $5.6 million for the flood hazard mitigation program. But just this session alone in the House and Senate, there's been about $149 million in bills introduced for the flood hazard mitigation program. Regarding the DNR, they do manage the flood hazard mitigation program, and their list of known needs is at about $139 million. And one thing about the Red River Board and our membership is we do have the match in place for these projects, and the projects are ready to roll. So a little bit more on the status of our projects. Unfortunately, none of them are fully functional. They're actually all about half completed. Excuse me. So from a funding standpoint, too, the projects are about half funded. And some of these projects we've been working on for about 10 years now. And many of these projects have been on that DNR list since about 2016 or 17. So just to kind of wrap up, what are we protecting? Well, we're protecting public and private infrastructure within cities, rural areas, farmsteads, and it's also about protecting and preserving a way of life and really preserving that social and natural, cultural and financial capital. And as recent as 2 years ago, we still had to do sandbagging up in the Red River Valley with a small city in western Minnesota, the city of Dumont, that did receive some flooding. So ultimately, all of our projects are multi-purpose, and I would just direct you, we have a little fact sheet that talks about the multi-purpose nature of our projects, and projects, like I said earlier, do include water quality, habitat, and other natural resource features. So with that, I appreciate the time, and I will conclude my remarks.
Thank you. Did you have something to add? Would you like to state your name for the record then and proceed?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chad Engels. I'm a registered professional engineer at the state of Minnesota. I'm here today representing the Bois de Soulis Watershed District, which is a member watershed district of the Red River Watershed Management Board that Rob just spoke of. I'm here today to talk to you about a project that's currently under construction. It's been under construction for the past 3 years. It's the Red Path Impoundment and Mistinka River Rehabilitation Project. Four sections of private farmland was purchased for this project. These landowners sold this ground to the district because they recognized the value of flood damage reduction in this area. There was a similar project constructed not too far away known as North Ottawa. And so it's a significant commitment. In addition, like I mentioned, this project is 3 years into construction. So we're not talking about one that's shovel ready. We're talking about one that's being shoveled. We just don't want to drop the shovel. All right. It's a $61 million project. We've spent $36.5 million so far. So we're 60% complete. Of this, $18.1 million has been state funds. Our partners have been Bowser, Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Fund, LCCMR, and flood hazard mitigation. The flood hazard mitigation is the one that's been lagging. So the request that we have is specifically for this project to keep the scrapers moving is $13.7 million. And that'll be matched by both the Bois de Soulis and the Red River Watershed Management Board. And if we can keep this thing rolling, we think we can get it done in about two more construction seasons. So that is my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have another testifier?
I think we have one more, Madam Chair.
Yes. Please come up front. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tracy Halstensgaard. I'm the administrator for the Roseau River Watershed District. Our project is the Roseau Lake Rehabilitation Project. It's been ongoing for over 10 years in planning, development, permitting, and it's a partnership project with the DNR. We are also shovel dirty. We have two construction seasons, one phase of the project completed. We're looking for $9 million to help us complete the next phase of the project. As Chad referred to, we want to be able to keep these projects moving in a timely manner. We lose momentum, we lose dollars in increased cost when things slow down and we have to either stall the project or complete them in smaller phases. So we really appreciate your time, your consideration. We know you have a lot of difficult decisions to make in the coming weeks and days. And just know that Northwest Minnesota, the agricultural communities, our small communities up there are committed to partnering with all of the different partnerships that we can, the Red Board, the DNR of the state, and Lassard Sam's, everything that's been mentioned earlier. We have good functional relationships with those folks. We have a proven track record of getting projects done and being able to manage those projects on the landscape. So thank you again.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Red Path and North Ottawa, those are the type of things we need to do to hold the water. You'd mentioned matching funds, and I'm assuming that each of the watershed districts has the ability to levy to assist. If you could just confirm that.
Go ahead. Can you pronounce your last name for me? Is it Halstensgaard?
Halstensgaard, yes. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we do. Each watershed district that is a part of the Red River Watershed Management Board has that ability to levy for construction for those match dollars.
Representative Hansen.
And Madam Chair, and then looking at the bill, it looks like most of these are impoundments, but I'm wondering about the first one, the $2 million for Newfold, and is that traditional levees and dikes, or is that an impoundment?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Sipp.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen. So that's a kind of a combination project that does have a flood impoundment as part of it. There was also a bridge replacement within that project, and I believe there's some other flood components that are part of that project, so kind of a multi-purpose project.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then finally, Representative Lilly and I were talking that I think with North Ottawa a long time ago, there was money that came from Outdoor Heritage for the wildlife portions of it. Have you been able to receive any funds for the wildlife components on the impoundments from Outdoor Heritage recently, or have you applied in the next round?
Mr. Sipp.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Hansen. Many of the projects do receive Lassard SAMS funding, Clean Water Fund dollars, the Redboard funds, the local watershed funds. I might be missing some other funds, but yes, a lot of the projects do have 5 to possibly 8 funding partners.
All right, thank you. Any further member comments? Okay, Representative Burkle, final thoughts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Red River Basin faces this chronic flooding threat every year, and just a great need for this in our region. So thank you for hearing this bill today, and we can move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Burkle, and thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today. Appreciate you advocating for your cities. All right, next up we are going to have Representative Joy and Representative Keeler for House File 2224, City of Moorhead, Clay County, and Buffalo Red River Watershed District. And then we have a Zoom testifier as well. You may state your name for the record, either whoever wants to go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jim Joy. We have in front of us I've been here 3 years. This ask has been here many times, and it's for finishing the flood protection in Clay County for about $60 million. And Representative Keeler and I are working bipartisan on this, and so she probably has some comments on this too.
You do make a very good team. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chairs. Really just showing up that this is a bipartisan effort for our community. Flood mitigation is something that our community has been working diligently on and will probably be working on for the rest of our careers. So hand it over to our testifiers.
All right. Thank you. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Franson, Chair Lee, Representative Joy, Representative Keeler. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. And as a mother of four, I just really am encouraged to see young people in this space in so many capacities. It really is a teamwork effort to lift the needs of our state. My name is Jenny Mojo. I'm a Clay County Commissioner, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today regarding House File 2224. As stated, I want to thank all of those who have come before to help us with this ask. It is a very large ask, and we understand that. It is a continued diligent effort to help us finalize flood infrastructure for the FM diversion project, particularly focusing on Clay County and the City of Moorhead. The request before you today is $60.4 million to complete flood mitigation work for Moorhead and the Minnesota portions of the FM diversion project, which includes the Buffalo Red Watershed District. This funding is critical, ensuring that we continue our efforts to protect Moorhead and Fargo and our region from the devastating impacts of flooding. The Red River is unique in that it flows north, making it especially prone to spring flooding. The Red River Valley is one of the most flood-prone areas in the United States, with 7 of the top 10 flood events occurring in the past 30 years. As we have seen, the threat of flooding is not just an inconvenience, but is a major risk to the safety, economy, and the well-being of our communities. Investing in flood mitigation now is far more cost-effective than dealing with the aftermath of floods. The 1997 flood alone resulted in $3.5 billion, with a B, dollars in damages. That's $6.4 billion when it's adjusted for inflation of today. Beyond those financial costs, flood mitigation ensures that communities remain operational during flood events, keeping our schools, businesses, and essential services open. It also reduces the high flood insurance premiums that homeowners and businesses would otherwise face. The FM Diversion Project is a $3.2 billion initiative, which is already 65% complete. It has received significant investments, including $750 million from the federal government and $850 million from the state of North Dakota. Our estimates are over $100 million for the state of Minnesota, which we vastly appreciate. While the work in North Dakota is on track to be completed by 2027, the remaining projects in Minnesota, including those in Moorhead, Clay County, and the Buffalo Red River Watershed District, are just as critical to protecting homes, businesses, and infrastructure. And that is why our request for bonding today is so vital, to complete the Minnesota portion of this project and ensure that we have the flood protection needed against the region's for the region's long-term resilience. The reconfiguration and planning of the FM Diversion Project stem from a joint task force that was created by Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum in 2017. This task force was charged with finding a way forward that would balance the interests of both states. Over the past 8 years, it's been a collaborative effort that has served as a key design for shaping the project design. The recommendations from the task force were designed to incorporate protections for both communities and the environment, while also addressing the concerns from upstream residents. These strategies have been directly integrated into the permitting processes by all of our Minnesota agencies, ensuring that the project proceeds with the necessary safeguards in place for our residents and for our environment. Most of the projects requested for funding today are critical to completing the Minnesota portion of the diversion project. But as note, they are also a direct result of the requirements that came from those permitting agencies and the settlement agreements with upstream residents and cities. These projects are not just about flood protection. They also fulfill the commitments made to those that have made sacrifices for this project. Beyond the work in Moorhead, as you see, there are several key components that must be completed to ensure full flood protection. Several road raises, the City of Comstock Lagoon Project, the Southern Embankment Property Acquisition, mitigation to protect cemeteries affected, a levee around the City of Georgetown, and also a substantial project for the City of Wolverton. These projects are essential for flood protection, but also for those commitments made for the settlement agreements, as I said before. In conclusion, this bonding request is critical to the success of the diversion project. By completing the necessary flood mitigation in Minnesota, we can provide long-lasting protection for the region, prevent future damages, support the economic stability of our communities, and this is a collaborative effort between the federal government, the states of Minnesota and North Dakota, and the recommendations of the Joint Task Force. The requirements set forth by the permitting agencies and settlement agreements and all demonstrate the necessity of completion of these projects. I understand this is a large ask. We've grouped the requests together so that the legislature can view the holistic requirements of the project, understand that the end is in sight, and have the flexibility to phase the funding based on financial capacity. This will ensure we can reach our goal without any undue delays, being mindful of the state's fiscal ability. The bonding request in House File 2224 will support levees, stormwater lift stations, county road races, all of which are requirement from the permitting of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. These components are part of the settlement, as said earlier, and will result in essential mitigation requirements for the FM diversion project. As someone who grew up on a vibrant farm just miles away from some of the century farms that have been displaced due to land acquisition for this project, I want to express my heartfelt thanks to the committee for your continued support. Your help in securing this funding is vital. Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, and I believe we have the mayor on Zoom. If you would like to state your name for the record and proceed, Mayor.
Thank you so much. I am Mayor Shelley Carlson and also a former board chair of the Metro Flood Diversion Authority. I want to express my gratitude to Co-Chairs Franson and Lee, the members of the House Capital Investment Committee, Rep. Joy and Rep. Keeler, the legislature, and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. You each have been exceptional partners and contributors to Moorhead's vital flood mitigation projects for the past 16 years, ever since the 2009 flood of record. A little context to emphasize who and what will be protected by the flood mitigation portion of the project in Moorhead. Moorhead Clay County is the fourth fastest growing community outside of the Twin Cities. And in fact, we represent the largest urban area outside of the metro. Our combined population between Fargo and Moorhead of 250,000 people is bigger than Rochester, bigger than St. Cloud, and bigger than Duluth. Again, 250,000 people call Fargo-Moorhead home. The area contains billions of dollars in property, including homes and businesses in Moorhead. 10,800 students attend Minnesota State University Moorhead, Concordia College, and or M State Technical College, and approximately 500 college professors work at one of these higher ed institutions. Additionally, 60,000 people travel from outlying cities such as Dilworth, Glendon, Hawley, and Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, each day to work in the metro area. Since 2009, previous flood dollars granted to Moorhead, which the city of Moorhead has contributed nearly $30 million in a actual overmatch. The flood dollars have been put to good use that we were given by the state legislature. They protect millions of dollars in significant infrastructure and protect a multitude of our most at-risk neighborhoods. 337 damaged and or at-risk homes have been acquired. The number of sandbags needed each spring has been reduced from 2.85 million, again, 2.85 million sandbags, down to just under 4,000, and 19 miles of permanent levees and flood walls have been installed. However, the projects in Moorhead are only 89% done, and no one wants to leave a project unfinished. What remains in Moorhead are seven flood control lift stations for high-risk service areas that right now require manual operation using farm tractors and on-site monitoring during flood events. These remaining seven lift stations must be converted to permanent power in order to meet FEMA and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers risk and reliability standards. The cost of purchasing and installing these lift stations rise each year. Last year, the cost per lift station would have been $1.3 million. Today, it's approximately $2.28 million per lift station. Commissioner Mojo briefly mentioned the need for flood-prone residents in Moorhead needing to carry expensive, high-risk flood insurance. This expense is costing residents in Moorhead alone approximately $10 million each year, with costs continuing to rise. The FM diversion project, once certified by FEMA, will relieve Moorhead flood residents of this financial burden. However, until Moorhead and Clay County projects are completed, the diversion project will not be certified by FEMA. And for all of these reasons today, I ask for your yes vote for House Bill 2224. I also stand for questions, and the executive director of the Flood Diversion Authority is also in my office. His name is Jason Benson, and I want to publicly thank him for his service to the Minnesota National Guard. He has served overseas several times and is currently a brigadier general in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, and we are not voting on any bills today. We're just hearing them on an informational basis only as bonding committees, and we'll try to put together a bill that best reflects our state, which is very difficult to do with the limited amount of dollars that we have these days. Representative Joy, you did this. Did you have something to add?
Close in when you're ready.
Okay. Members, any questions? Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And are these the lift stations that we saw last year where the tractor was there? And then maybe to the mayor, the question about the previous project with the impoundments, is that going to have any impact on reducing the flow at all? If we keep working on those, is that, are those impoundments or projects like them reduce the bounce that comes with the flooding?
Ms. Monjo?
Thank you, Chair Franson. Thank you, Rep. Hansen, for the question. Yes, a significant amount of, once completed, a significant amount of water will be diverted from the city. There's a maximum level that will be allowed through town. But with that, there then would be an impoundment area for water south of town, which is why the projects are so vitally important. One, there will no longer be the need for flood insurance in town, but we also need to safeguard those residents that are not within the dike.
Okay, any other further member questions, comments? Representative Keeler, did you want to do closing thoughts? Representative Joy, then.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Mojo, for making the trip down. Thank you for the testifiers. Thank you, Mayor Shelley Carlson, for your testimony. And look forward to getting this cross finish line so you guys don't have to hear it next year. Thank you.
Wonderful. That would be great. All right. Well, thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today. We appreciate you advocating for your city. Thank you, Representative Joy and Representative Keeler. All right. We are going to go now to Representative Torkelson with House File 1455, Minnesota River Basin Area 2 Flood Hazard Mitigation Project. Please. And then I believe your testifier is on Zoom. Representative Torkelson, you
that
may state
correct,
your name
Madam
for the record
Chair.
And proceed.
Well, thank you for hearing House File 1455. I know you're a limited amount of time. House File 1455 is a $1.5 million appropriation to Area 2, and my testifier will be happy to explain some details.
All right. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you. My name is Carrie Netsky. I am the Executive Director for Area 2 Minnesota River Basin Projects. We are a nine-county joint powers organization proudly celebrating our 47th anniversary year. I'm here on behalf of House File 1455, requesting a capital investment of $1.5 million for our work involving floodplain mitigation and management within southwestern Minnesota. The Area 2 watershed stretches from Whartonville to Mankato along the south side of the Minnesota River and includes the upper headwater reaches of five major river watersheds, including the Yellowbank, Lacaparle, Yellow Medicine, Redwood, and the Cottonwood. Area 2's approach to flood damage reduction over those past 47 years is to stop the water where it falls and essentially construct floodwater retention projects in a stair-step fashion down the slopes of the Buffalo Ridge, which is much more famous for the wind towers that are located upon it. But what makes the Buffalo Ridge so enticing for this is that it rises 1,000 feet higher than the surrounding lands, creating elevation differences of up to 92 feet per mile in the Yellow Bank River headwaters and 50 feet per mile in the Redwood River headwaters. In contrast to the Red River Valley, where flooding is much more publicized, the elevation drops there are a few feet per mile. A simple illustration to envision Area 2's flooding is like a playground slide. If you would take a gallon of water and pour it down from the top, that water gains velocity and force as it travels down that slope and comes shooting out at the bottom. It's the same thing that happens with the Buffalo Ridge. It comes shooting out the bottom onto the floodplains. For the Red River Valley, in contrast, if you take that same gallon of water, it's like putting it on your kitchen floor. It spreads out evenly in all directions and covers a large area. Due to our very steep slopes, the rainfall and rapid snow melts cause extreme erosion forces and makes flooding a nightmare for the people who live there and for those people living from the land. Area 2 suffers from a secondary form of flooding, which is very unique. It's called crossover flooding. So not only do our waters flow northeasterly down the Buffalo Ridge and into the Minnesota River, but they can also flow southeasterly. If you imagine Whartonville to Mankato, there's a huge elevation drop. But as those rivers get too full, they can essentially skip watersheds. So the Lacaparle can flow into the Yellow Medicine into the Redwood into the Cottonwood. So essentially our flooding dilemmas are twofold with those two sources. Area 2's proven approach allows for landowner-friendly and voluntary solutions to control those erosive forces of our floodwaters and further reduce the damages to the stream banks that add the sediments and nutrients to our already impaired waters. The reason for my testimony today is our need of construction funds. As depicted in one of the handouts that was provided, our past bonding appropriations began back in 1996. Not only have we successfully used these appropriations, but the local match to these bonding funds far exceeds the required $1 local to the $3 of state money, which is 75-25 cost share. The bond funds do not pay for salary or office space. They are completely used to hire the contractors and to pay for the engineering for these projects that we are putting on the land. Our 47-year success speaks for itself. Area 2 has been recognized by the Board of Water and Soil Resources as a leader in water storage, and we've been consulted many times as the board has developed their water quality and storage program. The second handout that was provided to you illustrates the type of projects that we build and design. And there's a map on the back side that depicts where these projects are located in relation to that Buffalo Ridge. From that map and the inset photo, you can clearly see that there's a strong correlation to where these projects are located in the start of the floodplains below. So we're very effectively controlling those flows as they come off of the Buffalo Ridge. By doing our part to reduce the floodwater damages and to keep the sediments and nutrients on the land at the headwaters, we're bettering the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River for generations to come. I thank you for your consideration of our request, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you today, especially remotely.
All right. Thank you for that testimony. Appreciate that. Members, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Torkelson, I think you were here when I asked the question in the Red River Valley Board. Has Area 2 been able to access any outdoor heritage money for wildlife portions of impoundments or water retention programs?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I do not have that information at my fingertips. I know there have been a number of wildlife projects conducted in these watersheds. Area 2 itself does not do wildlife work as far as I know, but if you, my testifier may have more information if you want to ask her.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Torkelson, I was looking if they, you know, there may be components that have wildlife benefits if the testifier has applied for any of those, any other funds for some of those water retention programs.
Mayor Netsky, do you have the answer for that?
Yes, Madam Chair and Ms. Representative Hansen. The majority of our projects are designed as dry dams, so we really concentrate on the floodwater storage portion of the projects. Very often we do not, but once in a while we may have a small pond, which actually increases the sediment catch ability of that project. But no, we have not combined our sources of funding with Lessard SAMS for that wildlife purpose.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You do good work. Just checking, is there any measurement of increase of drain tiling in the Area 2 during this time when we've been investing these public dollars?
Mayor Netsky.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, to be honest, no. There really isn't a way to measure the amount of drain tiling that's going in. It would be nice to have that kind of information because that's very vital when it comes to designing projects to know, how those waters are increasing off of the landscape. Just from being a rural resident myself and driving the watersheds, it's continuing at a constant increase, put it that way. I don't see a slowing of the drain tile installation.
All right, thank you. Any further member questions? Representative Torkelson, final thoughts?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this bill. You know, we think of Minnesota as, Southwest Minnesota as being flat, but I would tell you that the amount of fall from the top of the Red Rock Ridge to my farm in Watonwan County is greater than the amount of fall from my farm to New Orleans.
Well, that is something to think about.
Thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Appreciate that. And thank you for testifying today, Mayor Netsky. We appreciate you advocating for your city and your area. Okay, next up, members, we have two bills that I understand are controversial. Okay? So we are going to hear them. They do play a vital role to our state. And even that statement I made may be controversial to some. Okay. But with that, we are going to hear Representative Perez Vega's House File 1361 for the City of St. Paul and CHS Field. And I'm going to ask members to be respectful to the bill author and also to the testifiers as well. All right. Just remember, we're just hearing these bills. We're not voting on them.
And with that, Representative Perez Vega, you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of this wonderful committee. I am surprised to hear that this is controversy, but it's one of my favorite songs by the great artist, the late legendary of Prince. So we'll take that as a memo for the record. I ask to move forward House File 1361, Madam Chair, members of this committee, and this is an appropriation of $8 million from the bond proceeds fund to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for a grant to the City of St. Paul relating to capital investment and authorizing the sale and issues of state bonds. Over the first 10 years of operation, CHS Field in Lower Town St. Paul, home to our St. Paul Saints, AAA affiliate of the Minnesota Twins, has delivered on its promise to its public partners and honored the public investment in the facility with programming that provides affordable family fun entertainment, accessibility to meet the aspirations of youth and amateur sports in our state and region, and a community gathering place serving our region with non-sports programming year-round. Over 500,000 people visited CHS Field last year in the heart of our downtown's Lower Town community. The team has 100% responsibility for the management, operation, and maintenance of a facility owned by the City of St. Paul. To date, other than initial construction, no public funds have been dedicated or used with regard to maintenance and capital improvements on the ballpark. In 2021, the Saints bought the AAA Minor League Baseball, the highest level of affiliated minor league baseball, to the Twin Cities. The Twin Stars of the future make their final stop in St. Paul on the way to Major League Baseball at Target Field. I have been able to witness the expansion of what the Saints have been able to do in the capital city that I love and represent here, sitting in District 65B, since I was a young kid. Puerto Ricans, we grow up as baseball fans with the humanitarian efforts and great excellence of the Hall of Famer Roberto Clemente. And with aspiring those commitments to humanitarian efforts, both of the organizations between the Saints as well as the Twins are committed to children. I remember being a junior high and high school student in Frogtown community into Midway with St. Agnes, and we didn't have a baseball field for our team. We didn't have a football field for our team. But the St. Paul Saints, stood up, and they may have provided that. They're continuing to do those efforts with this amazing ballpark that needs improvement to serve with environmental justice and also including to maintain our businesses who are supportive of this in the Lower Town District of 65B. With that, I want to speed it up because, like you said, we're big chatty, me and you, my tocaya, as we say, Mary Maria, Chair. But I want to pass it over to the great co-ownership of Tom Whaley of the St. Paul Saints here. Thank you.
Thank you, and I love your enthusiasm for your city. Mr. Whaley, you may proceed. State your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Tom Whaley. I'm the Executive Vice President of the St. Paul Saints Baseball Club. As a matter of housekeeping, if I could direct comments to the young lady to your immediate left, if you could refrain from telling my wife about those red cards you're holding up, I would greatly appreciate it. She doesn't need any bright ideas. Thank you. I know. You're just.
We aim to give ideas to wives out there.
Oh, boy, I don't know about that. Okay. But thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Just to expound a little bit on the improvements, I think it's important, the backdrop and the context to this is the good news in 2021, the Saints were able to affiliate with the Minnesota Twins. We operated for over 25 years as an independent team, real successfully at Midway Stadium, as the representative pointed out, and then in 2015, opened CHS Field. CHS Field is a public-private partnership between the state of Minnesota, the city of St. Paul, the Saints Baseball Club, and Hamline University. It's been a public-private partnership that's worked incredibly well. It's brought vibrancy to Lower Town, and we've done it in a way that we feel is responsible and merits your consideration of this bill going forward. What we're really doing is continuing that for several more years. So we appreciate that. I mentioned in 2021, Major League Baseball changed its minor league structure, reducing the number of teams from 160 around the country to 120. While that was unfortunate for many communities, it did result in St. Paul and the Twins deciding to operate their AAA team. Our fans love it. It's been a wonderful boon to the city. It's added more events to St. Paul's roster of events. What came with that was a requirement among Major League Baseball to have certain facility standards. Most of those facility standards deal with players' health, safety, and welfare. The players now make more money than they ever have before. They receive housing allowances. They receive more meal money. But also as part of that, facilities are required to upgrade. To date, we have spent, in addition to the operation and maintenance, we've invested $4 million of our own money into the facility which the city owns. $2 million of that went toward, just to sort of get over the hump in 2021, to meet Major League standards. And while we're okay in 2021, we're not going to be okay long term, and that's much of the basis of this request. So I think it's also important to note there's context. Since 2021, communities around America, facilities and improvements totaling $2.3 billion have been made to keep these affiliations current. And we're fortunate in St. Paul. We've invested two so far. If we're fortunate to receive another eight to go toward those, we will be on the very low end of that spectrum in terms of where, you know, what communities are spending to keep their affiliations current. Our bottom line is our visiting player facilities are deficient. The players, when they come to town, they love playing in St. Paul. The ballpark's full. It's very exciting. But when they come to the park, they're stretching and working out in a corridor before the game where our concessions folks are going. We're trying to run our promotions. They're in stairwells trying to do it. They travel with groups of probably 40 to 50 players and coaches. And their commissary probably comfortably accommodates 12 to 15 people. So players are having to take their meals and eat at their lockers, different things like that. We get a lot of complaints from the visiting teams on the facilities. They complain to Major League Baseball. We have been trying to make the best of it. I feel we are making the best of the situation. But long term, it's not a sustainable situation. And the improvements, I won't go into gritty detail. I believe you all have the handouts. Those are explain what we're going to do to augment the visiting players' facilities. And that will include locker rooms, including facilities for female coaches, and we hope one day players, a training room, a commissary for them, equipment storage, weights and stretching area. None of that exists right now. So I will conclude my remarks now, and we'll note if it's okay that the red card was not raised, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Whaley, is there a reason why, so this is, the facility is about or it will be 10 years old, correct?
Correct.
Is there a reason why it was not built to the standards that you're looking for now, or were you not envisioning?
Well, I think one of the smartest things, okay, I got 2 minutes. I can do this. What's really important, we put a lot of foresight at the direction of the city of St. Paul. We designed it was designed in 2013 and 14. It was designed to then current Major League standards. We were not a Major League affiliated team at that point. We just felt it was the smart thing to do. The bottom line is, having done that, it did result in a much lower level of investment to get it, you know, sort of over that initial hump. So, but the standards did change in 2021 regarding players' health, safety, and welfare, and so we're dealing with those now.
Okay, thank you. Representative Carroll.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this. I know your passion for St. Paul. I didn't understand the passion for baseball. I know you're a star player at St. Agnes and would be reffed by Representative Hewitt. Is that correct?
Representative Perez Vega.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Carroll, I was actually a basketball star, but I did attend to take the stats for our baseball players and also had all-star cousins that played on that team through scholarships.
Great. And Chair.
Representative
Carroll. So understated.
So I'm a little surprised that, this is to your testifier, that you would want to improve the experience for the visiting team. I think you'd want a competitive advantage. I'm from Iowa.
Okay.
So the University of Iowa has pink locker rooms for the players in the football stadium. And the reason is the former coach, Hayden Fry, was a psychology major. I think he had an advanced degree in it. And he found that pink is a calming influence on players, and so he thought he could get a competitive advantage. Why don't you want to take advantage of what you have now? And
a nice lighthearted question to you, Mr. Whaley.
I'm good. Representative, thank you for that question. By moving the visiting players' facilities, we will create a little more room, and we feel an advantage for us. And I think we would find room in the budget to paint the visiting players' facilities pink.
All right, members, we're going to just speed up questions here real quick with Representative Reimer, then Allen, then Hansen, followed up by Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you both for bringing this to the committee today. My question is for Mr. Whaley, and sorry if I missed this in the presentation. When we look at the info sheet that you did as a handout, the different sources for funding of the $6 million total, obviously we have the bonding request here today of $8 million. We have the City of St. Paul, and we have the team. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any commitments, verbal or otherwise, from the City of St. Paul or team ownership for this project yet?
Mr. Whaley, you have to go through the chair first.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. At this time, no, we have not. The team is committed, but we've had preliminary conversations with the City of St. Paul. They're obviously engaged in several other bonding projects, but we will have a plan together. And again, I would refer back to the initial partnership that we have with the state and the city. Our intention is to continue that partnership, and what we come up with regard to this particular project would be consistent with that.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, to the testifier. Thanks for being here today. Asking the same question we ask everybody, is this project feasible by any chance?
Mr. Whaley.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative, it's a difficult project to phase because it's both improvements that we're referring to in the materials would be located in the very same vicinity of the ballpark. A challenge we have is that we're hemmed in on four sides. To the north, we have I-94. We're pretty sure that's not going anywhere. To the east, we have the Lafayette Bridge. That goes over the Mississippi River. That's not going anywhere. We share a wall to the south with the operation and maintenance facility with the light rail. That's not going anywhere. And I guess we could move Broadway and the farmers market, but farmers and the city would be a little upset with us, so we're not going to do that. But in regard to the phasing, what it would require is we could do one improvement. If we were to come back later and do another, we would necessarily have to impact the work we just done to do the other. So it is from a financial and also a project related perspective, that's a very difficult proposition for us. It's a tight area.
Very tight. Representative Hansen, then we're going to go to Lilly, and then Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at your overall operation, and maybe you don't have these numbers for us now, but what are your costs for utilities? What are your costs for water? And does your plan for renovation deal with reducing those anyway? And then also, you know, there's been this ongoing debate between artificial turf and grass and back and forth. You know, we've seen recently some reports about artificial turf having an impact of cancer on some of the players in other locations. So maybe if you could give us a little bit on cost and how what you're looking to build into the improvements.
Mr. Whaley.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Yes, with regard, the ballpark has several sustainability features right now that were built into it in 2015. One is a 100-kilowatt solar array that produces about 20% of our electricity, which comes directly into the building. It doesn't go out to the grid. With regard to water, we have a water reuse and reuse facility, basically, that takes rainwater off the operation and maintenance facility roof, brings it into the ballpark where we clean it up, and we're able to use it to irrigate the field and also flush toilets that are in a certain building. So, yes, we anticipate increased utility costs with these improvements, but we're prepared. As we mentioned before, we have 100% responsibility for that, and we're prepared to meet those obligations. With regard to your question about the turf, my former partner and co-owner, Mike Beck, was asked at the time, turf was brought in from Iowa to build Target Field, and a representative asked my partner, Mr. Vec, who was raised in the 60s, what his thoughts were about grass. And he said, I'm a child of the 60s, and I'm from the Just Say Yes generation. And I won't do that today, but we have no intention. We will be using natural turf going forward.
Thank you. Representative Lilly, quick question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative, thank you for bringing this. I eagerly signed on to this bill because I think it's a great project. I've been a fan of your product all the way back to the Midway and with the trains going by, and those are fun times, too, in a different way. But I just want to throw out there, just the other, it hasn't really come up today, how you're really good community partners and all the other events that go on at the facility, and you kind of mentioned it in your introduction, but it's just, it's really neat that you do that, and I'm a big fan of the, I mean, it's a variety of events, but then even we go pretty much every Saturday or every other Saturday to the farmer's market, and I notice you're even offering your patio for, like, I'm like, what's going on over there? And you're doing, like, you offered it for yoga or something. It was just, like, all sorts of interesting things going on. But just a final comment, when Louis Varlin comes through, don't keep him. Send him back up. So, local kid, so we want to see him. Not at your field as much.
All right. Madam Chair, Representative, thank you very much for that. We live by the motto that a community does not need a ballpark, but a ballpark desperately needs its community, and we get up every morning knowing that. And so that's our response is to do whatever we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Whaley, for being here. So just following up on Chair Franson's question earlier, so knowing that you're asking for this because of the standards of MLB, so the first question is, do they provide any type of assistance to, you know, ballparks like yourself to upgrade to their standard? And then the second piece will be, what is there to ensure the public that MLB 5-10 years down the line won't improve those standards so that we, the public, will have to pay for that again?
Mr. Whaley.
Chair Franz and Representative, thank you very much for that question. The first question was with regard to the, I'm sorry, I was focusing on the second, was?
Basically, how do we know that the MLB will not come later and want you to renew the standards, and then we're going to have to dish out more money?
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair. With regard to that question, there's no guarantee on that. We expect over time that the facility requirements will, there will be more of them. And what we are trying to do here is go a little bit beyond where they are right now to future-proof us, you know, hopefully for the next 15 to 20 years.
Representative Shirley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the first question kind of ties to this piece too, then. Knowing that, you know, whenever they have these different requirements, what type of assistance do they provide? And I think this ties to Representative Reimer's question first around the team and the others piece. Does MLB have anything to provide assistance to the team and to the taxpayer who are being asked to pay for this?
Mr. Whaley.
Madam Chair, Representative, currently they do not assist with the facility standards. Those are the responsibility of the team, and in some cases, it's a major league affiliate.
It's like the MPCA putting down standards, and then they don't help us with the standards. We just have to pay the bill. Exactly. Well, Representative Perez-Vega, I'll give you the final words, but I also think that maybe we need a bonding team building event when the game starts.
I concur, Madam Chair, and I offered that to both chairs, that I'm willing to welcome you to our great Saint Stadium. I don't want to take too much time, but I do want to thank my colleagues on both sides of the aisle who have addressed the support, who have addressed the commitment to empowering our Lower Town District, not only the Saints, but our residents. My constituents are in deep need. Our housing, as well as our businesses that said, hit the ball out the park with Tom Whaley on this one because we support you. So appreciation on that. Let's make our stadium safe. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you for presenting today. Thank you for coming down to the Capitol, Mr. Whaley. All right, next up, we are going to hear from the Xcel Arena regarding their complex renovations. Should be very exciting in here for about 20 minutes. So if you want to make your way down to the testifying table. Okay.
Cheers.
Mayor Carter, I believe you are going to start the presentation off.
Yes, please.
Welcome to the committee. And again, happy birthday to your daughter.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I will share
all
that.
Month long, Mayor Carter.
That's right. I appreciate that. Good morning, Co-Chair Franson, Co-Chair Lee, and members of the House Capital Investment Committee. I want to thank you for your invitation today. I'm Melvin Carter, a proud mayor of the city of St. Paul, the capital city of the state of hockey, and appreciate the opportunity to connect with you today about our proposed renovation of the Xcel Energy Center area complex. This complex is a center of social and economic activity for our city and for our state. Together, the Xcel Energy Center Arena, St. Paul River Center, and Roy Wilkins Auditorium attract over 2.1 million visitors per year to our city, infuse nearly $400 million annually into our local economy, and drive business, jobs, tourism, and vitality through our community and our entire region. Just as exciting, the arena complex will be on the global stage later this year when we host the International Ice Hockey Federation's 2026 World Junior Hockey Championships. Big things are happening, but with this city-owned 25-year-old facility nearing the end of its competitive lifespan, our momentum requires action. The arena complex must be modernized to stay competitive, not just with other NHL arenas and entertainment venues, but within our own market. This project is about reimagining and expanding the entire complex as anchor of a vibrant entertainment district that attracts even more world-class events while fueling the kind of activity, energy, and growth that subsets housing opportunity, public safety, and economic development. When there's a hockey game or concert or other types of major event taking place in the complex, we all know it. The impact is large. Visitors and residents book our hotels, dine in our bars and restaurants, shop locally, and experience all that our city has to offer. This project is about maximizing and continuing those impacts. It's also connected to the revitalization of our downtown and strengthening public safety goals in general. Right now, people are voting with their feet on our downtown, and our most pressing task now is to create the type of infrastructure that keeps them downtown. We know that when public spaces are maintained and invested in, people use them. We know that enhancing infrastructure and improving accessibility creates a more welcoming environment for residents and visitors alike, and we know that the power of people creates a community. Madam Chair, Representatives, I recognize the face value paradox of making an argument for an arena renovation among communities arguing for critical needs like water and flood management solutions. Fortunately, as we're seeking appropriation bonding, the resources we seek do not have to compete for those scarce general obligation bonds that those projects are seeking. Moreover, as this investment would not only secure the continuity of the Xcel Energy Center complex's current $383 million annual economic impact, but also serve to increase that annual economic impact by over $100 million a year. That's critical revenue that would ultimately expand our statewide capacity to meet the types of critical needs that you're hearing today over the next 30 years. This vision to reimagine the future of our city and our region is bold, ambitious, and necessary. We're creating a city anchor where people want to be, a hub of energy, business, and community that reverberates beyond our borders. A renovated, modernized Xcel Energy Center Arena complex is the catalyst that makes all of this possible. I thank you for your time, and I'm joined by Craig Leopold, owner of the Minnesota Wild.
All right, Mr. Leopold, I'm going to give you a max of 4 minutes. We have about 17 minutes left in the committee. That includes member questions and comments, okay?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Craig Leopold. I am the owner of the Minnesota Wild, very proud owner. I'm also the owner of the Minnesota Sports and Entertainment Company. We have had the privilege of managing the arena as well as the St. Paul River Center, Roy Wilkins Auditorium, and other conference and event spaces within the complex since day one. 25 years and a global pandemic later, Xcel Energy Center is now at the end of its intended lifespan. The arena, as well as the 93-year-old Roy Wilkins Auditorium and the River Center, now require significant renovations to stay competitive in our local market and with other venues nationwide. Over the last few years, we've visited arenas and downtowns across the country, seeing firsthand how similar investments have literally transformed communities. We know that we can use these incredible public assets for so much more, and that's what this is all about. We've conducted a market feasibility study and venue assessment and have been working with an internationally renowned company that's been behind similar exciting investments from U.S. Bank Stadium to the Edmonton Ice District. We're excited about what this opportunity could mean for our hometown. The Minnesota Wild are deeply, deeply rooted in St. Paul. We love the city, and we take great pride in calling it home. I myself have been a proud downtown St. Paul resident for 16 years now. Like many of you, I know how the energy in this city shifts when there's a concert or a game going on at the X. Downtown becomes full of life, and the sidewalks feel safer and more vibrant. It's St. Paul at its best. Our team in this arena drive hundreds of millions of dollars into the local economy, supporting thousands of jobs and bringing millions of visitors to our city. This is the vital economic engine driving St. Paul. It's hard to imagine the city without it. This is our chance to reimagine St. Paul as a city that's not just part of the future, but a city that defines the future. I personally invested in this project because I love St. Paul, and I truly believe this is our best shot at positioning the city for the future. Other cities around the nation are making these investments. If we hope to have a thriving, vibrant capital city for years to come, we have to do this now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Did you have any other testifiers that wanted to testify real quick? Yes? Please make your way up. We are limited on time.
Okay.
And if there's anyone else after this testifier, please come up to the testifying table. Please state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, everyone. My name is Josie Skugman, and I'm a senior at Hill Murray School. I'm a St. Paul native, a two-time All-State hockey player, and a recent Minnesota State girls hockey champion. In my high school career, I've had the honor of competing at the state hockey tournament at the Xcel Energy Center 2 years in a row. Whether you're a high school or professional athlete, this venue is the pinnacle of our sport. We all know Minnesota is the state of hockey, but weeks like the state tournament are a great reminder as to why this is. We are the state of hockey because of the indescribable feeling that I get coming to downtown St. Paul and creating lasting memories, staying in the hotel with my teammates, taking in the competitive environment, and walking around downtown or the X. We are the state of hockey because we know how this sport brings people together. Having an incredible venue like the X to welcome crowds, including my family, friends, neighbors, and classmates, brings everyone closer. Now more than ever, having a space where we can all get together, enjoy sports and concerts we live for goes a long way. We are the state of hockey because we know what placing girls hockey on the biggest stage does for the sport, and we give it the attention it deserves. Women's hockey is often overlooked and overshadowed across the country, but not in Minnesota. I still remember walking to the X for the first time as a junior, feeling the energy and excitement of playing on the same ice as the Minnesota Wild and Frost. Playing on the stage is special, not just because of what teams can achieve there, but because we all know what an incredible opportunity it is to inspire younger girls and show them that this is their stage too. We are the state of hockey because my younger sister can see me and my teammates on the same ice as hockey icons from around the world and decide she's going to start playing hockey herself. I've been lucky to experience some of the happiest moments of my life at the Xcel Energy Center. It's hard to imagine Minnesota hockey without this arena in downtown St. Paul. Take a moment to picture it. We are the state of hockey because Minnesota does it like nobody else. Right now, we have the opportunity to guarantee these remarkable moments we share at the X can carry on for generations. Next season, I will be staying close to home and playing hockey at the University of St. Thomas, where my goal is to help the Tommies compete for a national championship. But no matter where my hockey journey takes me, my experience at the X will always hold a special place in my heart. By investing in renovations to the entire arena complex, we are making a promise to my little sister and young athletes from around the state that the opportunity to compete and experience the culture of the Xcel Energy Center will still be around for them. That is something worth investing in. Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to testify for you today.
Thank you, Ms. Goldman. That was great. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed real quick.
Good morning. Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bea Kyle. I'm the President and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber. So we represent 1,900 plus members largely within Ramsey, Dakota, and Washington counties. And I am honored to offer our voice and support in the efforts for this investment. And I look at this from an economic perspective. I travel the country and look at peer cities and work with chambers and businesses, and I can't share enough the economic impact that this kind of investment has made in other cities. And I want to highlight, too, how these big capital investments show up in across the region in Minneapolis and in St. Paul, and encourage you to invest in your capital city, our capital city, that what impacts us in St. Paul impacts us as a state and how we show up nationally and internationally. Just can't emphasize that enough. And then in numbers, when we're looking at an additional $100+ million each year in tax revenue and spending that happens in the city, that translates to a 20% growth for us in terms of revenue. And for context, this couldn't be more important in terms of what we're experiencing now in the real estate market and the opportunity to invest in the property today. So to keep it short, I want to say thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to hearing from you if you have any questions.
Thank you. If you want to state your name for the record.
B. Kyle.
No.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tom Biklich. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here on behalf of 70,000 women and men working in the trades across the state. I'm here today to express our strong support for the renovation funding package for the Xcel Energy Center, the St. Paul River Center, and the Roy Wilkins Auditorium. This $800 million project is more than just a renovation. It's a commitment to the future of St. Paul. These facilities have been anchors in our state for decades, hosting everything from world-class sporting events and concerts to community and business gatherings. But as you know, the competitive landscape has changed, and these venues are at risk and falling behind. This investment is a critical step toward keeping St. Paul vibrant, attracting visitors, and ensuring our capital city remains a destination for entertainment, tourism, and economic growth. A key component of this project is the project labor agreement that will govern both the construction and long-term maintenance of these facilities. That means 2,300 skilled union construction workers will be on site, men and women trained in the safest, most efficient building techniques, ensuring that this complex is built to last. And beyond construction, the workers who maintain these facilities will be paid family-sustaining wages and strong benefits, strengthening our workforce and supporting middle-class families in the region. The Xcel Energy Center was originally built in 1999, and while the arena has outlived its competitive prime, its structural integrity remains strong. That is a testament to the quality craftsmanship of the union tradespeople who built it in the first place. Now with this investment, our members are ready to once again deliver a world-class facility that will serve St. Paul and Minnesota for generations to come. This project is about more than just an arena. It has the potential to jumpstart an additional economic development downtown, a strong, thriving entertainment district, and fuels local business that fuels local businesses, restaurants, hotels, and shops, and makes St. Paul a more attractive place to live, work, and invest. When we believe this is the right investment at the right time, it puts skilled tradespeople to work, ensures quality jobs in the long term, and positions St. Paul for a brighter economic future. On behalf of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades, I urge your support for this critical funding package. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diklich. There was some mood lighting that took place. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but it got a little bit more romantic in this room. I'm going to have Mr. Andrew Lee come up real quick to explain the difference between general obligation bonds and general appropriation bonds. Mr. Lee, if you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your explanation here. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. General obligation bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the state and have restrictions on uses. They have to be publicly owned, they have to be capital in nature, and they have to be authorized by three-fifths of both chambers of the legislature. Appropriation bonds have evolved over the early 2000s as having a wider portfolio of potential uses. They don't require the three-fifths authorization requirement. They can be of different bond terms, and the uses can be different. So some past examples of appropriation bond authorizations have been the Viking Stadium in Minneapolis, the buildings along the Capitol Complex, SWIFT Certificates of Participation, which was the state computer system or accounting system, and appropriation bonds. The principal amount applies to the first two state management guidelines, but does not apply to the third debt management guideline. Because they are not GO debt and that the full faith and credit of the state is not pledged to them, they have the potential to have a higher interest rate than GO debt.
Okay, thank you. Members, do you have any questions regarding the explanation? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the proposed revenue source for these appropriation bonds?
Do we have anybody that has that information? Mayor Carter?
I believe we're flexible where that's concerned. I think we are working to generate some concepts where that's concerned, but wanted to present to you what the broader idea today.
And I do believe, Representative Hansen, there has been chatting taking place with the tax chairs on that particular issue. All right. Representative Fogelman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I might be the biggest wild fan here in the room today, but this is exciting for me. Unfortunately, this is a huge ask for the state of Minnesota, especially with the economy the way it is right now. When you are looking at the changes that needed to be made in the facility, I was told that you did some extensive surveys with like your season ticket holders and those kind of things. You asked them about the proposed changes and the enhanced services during the games. What were the results of those surveys, and how many season ticket holders were not supportive of the changes that you were wanting to make to the arena?
Mr. Leopold?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Whenever we do any kind of polling with our fans, it's historically very high return. So we have a lot of people who give their opinions. What came out loud and clear is that our fans were looking for more options to view the team, for food and beverage, more concession options. There were issues with the lines in the restrooms, our food and beverage, the kitchens were in the wrong places, so food is coming out cold. The response that we had was very much in favor of making these concessions and the investment that would occur in this arena. They were very supportive of it.
All right, thank you. Representative Scrappa, real quick, we're running out of time.
Shoot them. As I've spoken to everyone here, I'm fairly supportive of what's going on. How we get to that dollar amount is going to be the challenge. But one of the things that came up after we were all talking and everything started making me wonder, when you build a new facility, it's always like everyone's just like, hey, this is awesome, beautiful. Do the prices of the goods go up? Are the beer prices, the food prices, you know, that sort of stuff, are they going to be staying open? Because if we put a substantial amount of dollars in, it'd be somewhat trying to buy that down. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you for that question.
Mr. Chair, Leopold?
Yep. Chair Franson, thank you, Representative. We are not planning to raise food and beverage prices. Some ticket prices will certainly be either gone up. Some, frankly, will go down. What we're looking at doing in the arena is creating more community space. That's one of the things that came back, is that people have seen other facilities and been in them, and they want to see areas that people can congregate and watch the game together. So we're excited about doing that. That is typically a lower price. So we are the types of ways of watching the game will change. We have 74 suites right now. We'll probably have only 50. And that will create more opportunities for us to have different ways that fans can buy tickets and watch and view the game, not being in a corporate suite.
All right, thank you. And Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. It's nice to see you, Craig. I enjoy our conversations in my first term.
Yes.
And wanting to get these numbers then and trying to see how we could be supportive of these initiatives. And as a chair of the delegation of our Capitolio of St. Paul, there's a draw of concerns from my constituents that I've spoken about, as well as my delegation members' constituents, when we talk about the appropriation funds, that would be a reliance of raising taxes. Our city is at the highest in the state, and we hear that all the time. And I would hate to go back to saying that the reliance of a $400 million would mean $20 million per year. Also, with the conditions of federal funds being frozen, and we've talked a lot about the infrastructure from our greater Minnesota right here into our cap city, is we're scared of the results of what was expressed to us in the federal government earlier this week on the potential of those grants, such as the $25 million for the Robert Treat Viaduct not being accessible anymore, and that they were going to rely on efforts from our state to be a part of that project. So when we're looking at the numbers of $394 million, which was the adjustment, it's okay, he's singing, don't quiet him, Jay Sean. He's feeling this sense on the Minneapolis side too. But, these are the conversations that my constituents are concerned about. I understand that you've said, and we've had those conversations about how community can be impacted. And I remember when the Excel was built and being in junior high and taking the bus and getting rides to Frogtown and seeing the construction from the Civic Center being knocked down and the promises of that this was going to help all Minnesota and particularly our communities of St. Paul. Well, this is the front yard of mm-hmm. my community. And I have not seen that help when you have the businesses that have been there for 25 years, like the Black Dog that closed down in Lower Town due to the COVID crisis. I have not seen the accessible efforts for the redevelopment of housing in the aftermath of the delinquency of Madison Equities. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about how, and we talked about affordable housing, and when you said, what does that even mean? Okay, so what it means is we have a delinquency of buildings that are across the street or down the block, across the street from City Hall, the city annex, that are being condemned. And our homelessness crisis leaks right here to our Capitol steps. And so when we're talking about $394 million, I have to address, Madam Chair, what my constituents concerned, what my colleagues concerned about. We don't have that budget. We're trying to make things work, and we are determined together to make a budget work. And so I understand that there was a talk about there's controversy with two bills. Madam Chair, this isn't a bill. And there's a reason why, because we have been asking for these questions to be delivered and in my hand. And this is the first time that I've actually had a print of this plan. And this is in my district. And I want to work. I love Xcel Energy. I took my mom to see Mary J. Blige Sunday. I seen Billie Eilish. I pay for all my tickets. I am the most person in qualified to talk about arenas because I performed at arenas and Xcel in my work as an entertainment artist. I've spoken with assemblymen from New York to talk about how the state supports Madison Square Garden. Assembly folks and representatives of the legislature of Illinois to talk about the United Center and the ports of Geofonds to the city of Chicago. And they're a little concerned if this was their arena, and this is how we're asking funds in a crucial, critical time of what our federal government is freezing. We're talking about water here. We're talking about bridges. I announced a bridge, a viaduct, that we celebrated that support, that grant with Betty, our Congresswoman of CD4, Betty McCollum, with the supporter of our city who came to ask me to be supportive. I am. You know, my students of the District of 65B take a bus in that Kremlin. And with their environmental issues, with climate change that is so led in that advocacy of Representative Hansen has drawn to the concern of crumbling Wabasha caves to these bridges, I want to say that if this is the number one priority for my city that I love, that I defend, and that I am a child of, and am raising a little girl right across the Excel who loves Frozen on Ice, I don't want to raise taxes for my people, for our people. I don't want that to be the continuance of how we are going to redevelop a St. Paul that was shining when I was younger. I want to talk off the record more, and I would appreciate those discussions with you and I, Mr. Leopold. Muchas gracias.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Carter. And I want to thank you before you leave for hosting our committee a couple months ago to tour the facility. So thank you for that.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you so much for that. We enjoyed the members who were able to join us for that tour. Representative, I believe that's a very strong case that you just made for why reinvesting in our downtown and making critical investments is so urgent for us. As you know well, our constituents in St. Paul are concerned about increased property taxes that are occurring from a whiplash effect due primarily to loss of value in downtown. As downtowns across the country face enormous headwinds, that are particularly exacerbated, as you acknowledge, by the sudden passing of our largest property owner downtown. The need to reinvest, the need to make bold moves is very critical for the future of our state, certainly for the future of our city, and for the goal of controlling and stabilizing property taxes for those exact same constituents that you just named. We'll look forward to continue to work with you toward all of those goals. Having the Xcel Energy Center as a critical centerpiece can help us be able to generate the types of economic and social activity that can help to drive the type of vibrancy that you're talking about. And on the worst case scenario, losing the impact that we currently have would, of course, be devastating for all of those goals that you just described. So we look forward to working with you and every member of the committee on those and other goals.
Representative Perez Vega, and then we're going to go quickly to Representative Zhang, and then Representative or Chair Lee will ask the final question and then gavel us out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mayor, thank you for your comments. You know, if this is the number one priority of the city, and this is in my district, okay, and we're coming to the state, and we talk about how much money goes into a Taj Mahal, and I wasn't here around then because I had some things to say about that, right? I'd like to see more effort, if this is your number one priority, to deliver this information to my office and to my delegation members who have been asking for quite a bit. And with that, I have no further questions, and I would like my former delegation member to speak. Thank you.
Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega. You asked a lot of questions I had already, but I guess I just have a different question. A question that normally will come from Chair Hansen. On sustainability practices, what environmental considerations are being incorporated into this renovation plan and to ensure that the complex meets the modern environmental standards? If you can answer, or if you can, your staff can send it to my office, I would really appreciate it.
That sounds like it might be a staff issue, but Mayor Carter, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Perez Vega, just for clarification, the number one priority of our city is always public safety. That will never change. We're very proud of the outcomes that we're achieving right now and some of the national press that we're getting as far as the outcomes that we're receiving around public safety. The most urgent priority for our city right now is revitalization of downtown and one of our biggest opportunities that we have, one of our most pressing needs slash biggest opportunities we have is the revitalization of the Xcel Energy Center. I'll ask Mr. Leopold to speak to some of the environmental impacts of the stadium construction.
Madam Chair, Representative, I wish I had the awards that we have received in this area, sustainability. I don't have them with me, but when it comes to the NHL, we have received the most awards of any NHL arena for sustainability and green efforts. So I will get that information to your staff, and we're very proud of it. I wish I had it with me, but I think you'll be excited when you see it.
Just quickly, my question.
Representative Zhang, please remember to go through the chair.
Nope, sorry, I apologize. So my question is, how is that going to be put into consideration in a renovation plan?
Yeah.
So if your staff can just send that to me, because we don't have time right now, but I would really appreciate it.
Okay. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, so just some quick closing comments before we close it out. So just going back to, you know, Mayor, I really appreciate the presentation. And, I said to a lot of communities that come before us to ask us for consideration for funding. It's not the merit of the actual project itself, but how do we make sure that our budget works? And, you know, what we have to hear today, I'm glad to know that, you know, you're looking at appropriation bonds, but to some of the other points, we don't have language, and so we don't know how it's going to work. And so, you know, what I have shared with the committee and, you know, left outside for the public is that when we look at appropriation bonds, members, we have to have additional cash above the base to pay for the debt service. And whether that's the state of Minnesota or the city of St. Paul, that's to be determined. We don't know because we don't have a bill in front of us. And just to remind, you know, all of us is that a lot of, you know, conversation that we've been having is that there's no cash for any capital investment bill. And so, you know, the information in front of you, you know, from MMB, from Mr. Andrew Lee, is that if we were to bond for appropriations bonds of $394 million, that's going to be $32 million above the base. And so that's, you know, for you to consider. And, you know, when we have such, you know, high needs across the state for infrastructure, that means that, you know, quite possibly if we were to go that route, we could consider doing a appropriation bonds, $400 million to add on top of the $700 million that we have to have a $1.1 billion bonding bill. And so, you know, I just want to, you know, let you, you know, that sink in for all of you, because right now we have the decisions to make. Do we put forth the dollars, the general fund dollars to pay for the debt service for this one project, or do we look at the entire state of Minnesota and all the great needs that we have? And I just want to, you know, have us think through, you know, in capital investment over the last 6 years that I've been involved in the committee, we have only had 2 bonding bills out of 6 years. And, you know, there are some talks that we might not even have a bonding bill this year. And so, you know, if this proposal is to move forward and they secure funding for the $394 million, you know, for all the other projects out there that requires a supermajority vote, how are we going to go back to our communities and talk about how we were not able to fund some of these critical projects in our community? And so, you know, just wanted to, you know, put that out there for all of us as we consider this. And we know that there's another proposal using appropriation bonds for one of our other stadiums that's, you know, across the river in my Senate district, in my city, too. And so I will hope that we can have this conversation when we revisit that, too, Madam Chair, that, you know, is this the right time for us to look at appropriation bonds when we don't have the general fund to pay for some of these debt service? And, you know, asking our local community to pay for it through local option sales tax or whatnot, is that the right choice, too, or not? And so I would just end at that, Madam Chair, and really appreciate the time. And, you know, we are over our time limit now. And so with no further business before us, we are adjourned.